Welcome to the Round 17 Supercoach Coach Podcast. My name's Marcus, and this week I'm joined again by FB Donkey.
G'day, mate. Did you miss me last week?
We didn't miss your showboating. but no, it's good to have you back on board, mate. How was your trip?
Perth is a great place. Very much a fan. I can see why they're going to replace Domain Stadium. It's a bit old. Looks a bit like Waverley Park back in the day. But no, everyone in Perth was very welcoming, and Eagles supporters are not as much dicks as everyone says. Maybe because they won.
Good to hear you. Good week over there, Mark. How'd your Supercoach team go over the weekend?
I was going pretty well last week. I was up to 240th, finished the buys in a very good situation. But then I've kept both Wells and Barlow this week, and which meant I had Petrarca on and Rose on as well, who scored 31. Because Adams is supposed to be my awesome cover on the forward line, and he's injured as well. So that kind of screwed me. That took me down to 354th in the ranking. So I guess that's still pretty good. But I guess I was due a bad week at some point. And I'm kind of hoping that keeping Wells and Barlow will help me out later on when it comes to needing trades. And I guess we saw the value of holding trades with Ablett and Liberatore going down on the weekend. You can just see that if a few people get injured at once, you can run through those trades very, very quickly.
I scored the 2260, so pipped you by just a little bit, but wasn't enough to stop me sliding as well. So I dropped to 626th, dropped about 100 spots. PODs just really failed to fire, I suppose. Bartel, 65. McVeigh, 77. Rance, 73. Treloar, 86. Like 2 weeks of my team, both scoring 80s. Very poor. Green 60, Wingard 77, and I had Adams and Wells out as well, so Petrarca in for 52. So a forgettable week, but I think when you're having forgettable weeks and you don't, you know, fall too badly, like you and I have, Mark, that is generally pretty good news. So hopefully when our team has banging ones, we'll shoot back up the ladder.
Yeah, I was just surprised that I wasn't a little bit further behind, to be honest.
In terms of a group update, we had Carl's M. Gafer All-Stars score 24-88. So a massive round compared to us. Well done to you. And just a shout-out to the runner-up for the round as well, Simon's Baps. He scored 24-87. So only 1 point off Carl, and honourable mention is well-deserved. The main topic for this week is Gary Ablett being injured and who to replace him with. He's out for the rest of the season, so it's not a question of holding, unfortunately. And we'll also discuss Tommy Liberatore, who was stretched off the field on the weekend and is some chance of returning this week, so we'll discuss that situation as well. And then look at some rookies who are on the bubble this week for anyone still looking for some downgrades. All right, we'll get right into it now, and we'll start off with the injury and suspension questions, and Liberatore is first off the rank. So news has come out that he's a likely starter this week, and we had a few people ask us about Liberatore and whether or not they should be trading him. It's an interesting situation to be in, because if you did want to trade Liber, for example, before your league finals, you might want to do it now just because he had quite a poor game and he's going to drop in price. If you're going for the overall and you cut Liber because you're down on value or down on trades, you might actually be in a situation where holding on to Liber makes a little bit more sense, because he's already dropped around 450k. It's not like you can get an ultra premium for that price. Depending on how much cash you have and how many trades you have left, he might actually be a hold despite his score of a 40.
Yeah, potentially. I can see teams that are down to like four trades left. If you've got four trades left, you should not be using them on Liber. Like, he's going to be back. I doubt really he'd play this week, but he's going to be back in the next couple of weeks. You can generally cover him from your bench. But I think your advice about if you're a league team, potentially using this as a moment to trade him out is not terrible advice. And I guess if you are a little bit short on cash, you might be able to pair the Liberatore and Ablett trades together and pick up two good premiums.
Yep, that definitely can be a good way of going about it. Unfortunately, Ablett slid a little bit as well, so he's at 589. But if you split the difference, I mean, you should be able to get two players in the low 500s, so you'll be looking for a couple of value premiums, which
you could get, like, Parker and Treloar, both about 500.
All right, Mark, so we'll move off Liber. I think the case is fairly clear there. If you have the luxury of trades, I think you move him on. But if you don't, unfortunately, you might be stuck with the bloke.
And if you have the luxury of trades, you're moving him on because you're upgrading him, not because of the injury.
Yeah, a mix of both, potentially. All right, Gary Ablett is the player that we want to discuss now. Obviously, the big topic and the big injury for the week. He's done his shoulder and he's out for the season, and really, really painful from the former perennial Supercoach champ to see him affected by injury so many years in a row is kind of a bummer, isn't it, Mark?
It really is, mate. I mean, he was the perma-captain for, what, 5 years or so? And we saw some glimpses this season. Like, there were some games where he just showed his ability to break out of a pack and kick a goal and hit targets and really win the contested ball. It did come through a couple of times this year, but, I mean, we might never see that again.
In terms of Supercoach trading, we're going to look at probably three different categories when looking at Ablett tonight: the top scoring replacements, the top value replacements, and also the PODs, Mark. We got quite a few questions about which players are a little bit unique that our listeners can take a punt on and maybe set them apart, particularly during the final series. A POD can really make or break a finals campaign.
Absolutely, and I think it's probably a good opportunity to bring in someone like that and hope that you can get a bit of an advantage over the pack and score an extra 100 to 200 points on the run home.
So in terms of a top scoring option, Mark, I'm just going to read out the top eight mids here. Dangerfield, Pendlebury, Hanbury, Neil, Selwood, Parker, Sloan, and Josh Kennedy. So
Kennedy.
Yeah, at the moment, Hanbury, Parker, and Kennedy all sitting in the top eight, Mark, after we poo-pooed the Sydney mids earlier in the year.
We said they're going to share points, but I guess because they're second on the ladder, they've just had so many points for their team that they've all been able to do quite well.
And Rory Sloan as well slipped into the eight with a very strong patch of form recently. So just looking at that top eight, Mark, I would probably say that the top five look like a distinct step above the rest, I think, in terms of consistency for the season. I mean, I think you could make an argument that Sloan's recent form and run home, Adelaide's run home, pushes him into that category of five. So I'd probably have Dangerfield, Pendlebury, Hanbury, Neil, Selwood, and Sloan in probably that class above. And then I think when you start hitting premiums number 7 and 8, Parker and Kennedy, the lines really get blurred between, you know, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. I think you're more likely to find that 110 averaging midfielder, especially just for a period of 8 weeks.
Yeah, well, I don't have three of those top five, mate. I don't have Neil, Hanbury, or Selwood. Selwood's very, very up and down, and I've sort of been backing Parker and Cochin against him, and they haven't been doing too badly in that battle. And Hanbury has been, obviously, he's probably the one that's just consistently done really well, but he's slowed down a little bit lately. So I'm actually going to find it pretty tough to pick out of those three. I think Hanbury has the durability and the consistency. Neil has the really high ceiling, but he's playing for a team that aren't in the finals. And Selwood has a pretty good draw on the run home, playing for the finals. Will he get a rest? He said preseason he would get a rest, and he hasn't yet. And he also has that potential that we've seen the last few years on the run home of having a really high ceiling, like 130 odd.
If I had to force you to list them, you know, 1, 2, 3, and then let's chuck Sloan in as a fourth, because I think a lot of people will be tossing between some combination of this four this week. How would you rank them?
I came on the show, mate, to try and get you to tell me how I should rank them. I really am struggling to split Neil, Hanbury, and Selwood. I think that just the Neil playing for a team that's not in the eight means I probably won't pick him, but I would still probably pick Neil slightly ahead of Rory Sloan. I've got Sloan at the moment, but Neil just, like, he's clearly the number one mid for that team and just seems to be racking him up week after week. So, look, it's really down to Hanbury versus Selwood for me. I'm really struggling who to pick. I guess I've already got Parker, but then I've already got Danger. So, I will decide closer to the weekend.
I'm probably going to go with, you know, how they're ranked by average at the moment. That's Hanbury 1. I've been talking it up all year, and I think he's so consistent, and I bought into him last week, so I'm very happy to have him on the team, Mark, and I think you'll be happy if you bring him on board as well.
He's had a couple of slightly down weeks, and I guess when I'm watching the games, Selwood's the one that really scares me when I'm watching. He's the one that I actively barrack against, whereas Hanbury, he's never going to go massive, so it doesn't worry me too much.
His worst two games are 86, 92, and then 100 after that. And I think the next lowest after that is close to the 110 mark already.
Well, he often has like a down first half, but just always works himself into the game and just gets up to that 100 mark.
Hanbury 1, 2 Neil, just because he's so consistent, 3 Selwood, and then 4 Sloan. Selwood could either come behind Sloan or he could end up at the top of that heap. It's pretty hard to actually nail that one down.
And I think that that's what probably draws me to Selwood a little bit, that if I'm going for ranking, overall ranking, then I'd like to maybe gamble that I'm going to get someone that goes completely nuts.
Whereas if you're going for the league, maybe a Neil Hanabry type might
Yeah, that's right. A Hanabry is exactly the sort of player you want in your league team, someone you can completely rely on to score that 100-odd points.
So let's talk value now, Mark. And I've got a few players listed that I'm going to run through. But before we head on to the rest of the value picks, I just want to address the two value picks within, you know, the top eight scorers at the moment. And that's Dan Hanabry, who's currently at 539. So considering how much we've talked him up, if you can make 539,000 work for your team, which we should be able to, because Gary Ablett costs 589, but let's say you're doing the, you know, Libba Ablett double, you might not be able to hit Hanabry. But if you are able to, he should be the clear standout this week.
And people might say, well, I've got no use for the cash, but if you just end up with an extra 50,000 in your bank when it comes to your next injury trade, that could be a huge advantage.
And Selwood and Neil, for example, are just that touch more at the, around the 580 mark. So you well notice that slight difference when you're making your injury trades, like you said, Mark. And Parker, obviously quite cheap as well. He was down to 460 at one point, but a 161 later, he's backed up to 520K, but still a relatively attractive price point. I think the only danger with Parker is that if you get his sort of down run in the run home to the finals, you really be fairly disappointed even at 520K. Whereas if he shows you his upside at 520K, you'd be absolutely laughing.
And he is very, very highly owned in the top 1,000, 2,000. So if you are up near the top, you're just sort of negating a pod that everyone else has to you. I guess going unique might be a better way to go about it.
I'm going to list out some top value blokes now, Mark, and these guys all cost under 520,000. And you let me know which catches your ear, and then maybe we can do a 1-2-3 after. So there's Callan Ward, 490,000. Steel Sidebottom, 490,000 as well. Trent Cotchin, 516,000. Adam Treloar, 498,000. Matt Prittis, 518,000. And Robbie Gray, 507,000. So those are all blokes that I think have the potential to average 110, maybe even 115, you know, across a patch of eight games. And they're really quite temptingly priced as well. Under 520,000 is really quite a sweet spot for those premium midfielders. And we've picked up Prittis, you know, earlier on in the season at that price as well.
Yeah. A few weeks ago, I took Cotchin over Gray as a point of difference, just because I wanted someone a little bit different in my team, someone to barrack for. And Cotchin's been quite good since then and was actually winning that battle until the last 2 weeks where Gray's had really big games. So, look, I think that Gray is definitely the standout in that group. I guess there's some sort of concerns over whether his body will hold up, but, I mean, he's sort of overcome a lot of those concerns in the last few years. I think he's the one that stands out of that group for me. I guess I've got my own perspective on Cotchin, and I really enjoy having him in my team and love watching him play every week and barracking for him, but I'd maybe have Callum Ward at that number two slot just because the Giants do have a good draw and he does have the potential to put in back-to-back good games, even though he's come off a bit of a up-and-down run in the last few weeks.
Yeah, I think I've got to agree with you on Gray, Mark. He does look like the standout of the bunch. Ward concerns me a little bit, as does GWS's form and some of their midfielders going down like Ryan Griffin. And he's not had that history of being able to break out into that next category before. So I'd actually probably be a little bit more confident in a Cotchin type. Having said that, Cotchin worries me just because Richmond aren't killing it at the moment. And I think that Cotchin needs to play in a team that's winning more games than losing in order to hit that 110 average. Treloar was one that I'd probably have second after Gray, but things have changed a lot since I picked him in my team and he scored 81 and 86. So I am no longer going to recommend the bloke until he turns things around. He's had four of his last five scores under 90 now, which is not what you want from a premium midfielder.
Crazy, because I think his first like seven or eight scores are above 100.
Hopefully he turns things around, Mark, because if I keep going 80s like this, it'll be the end of my Supercoach season. And although Prittis has seemed relatively underwhelming since we've brought him into our teams,
last couple of weeks have been all right, haven't they?
Yeah, 123, 112, 101, 114, 105, 76, which are poor one, 122 and 126. So 76 is the lowest. Apart from that, 100s. He's had five scores above 110. You don't see that same upside, but Prittis is about as reliable as it gets.
Yeah, I probably understated him in the response, and now that you mention it, would have him ahead of Ward for sure. Probably equal with Gray, really, because I do have a bit more confidence in Prittis being able to reproduce that going forward.
So taking Hanabry out of the equation, but, you know, keeping Parker in there because he is probably around this sort of mark, how would you rank Parker, Ward, Sidebottom, Cochin, Treloar, Prittis and Gray? Could you give me like maybe a top three?
I'm going to go Gray number one, just Prittis number two. And I'm going to put my pot in there, Cochin. I don't think anyone should pick him because I like him being a complete point of difference for my team. But yeah, Cochin has been, he's had an awesome season, honestly. Last 2 weeks under 100, but he's been very, very consistent and his effort is awesome. So love Coch.
I am going to go pretty much the same way with Gray and Prittis, one and two. My third one's going to be Parker, though.
Parker?
His upside's just so high. In the run to the finals, I would hope that he's building towards some good finals form. And
I was actually a bit worried going into the bye that he was maybe a bit injured. Like, they even mentioned it on the telecast at one point. My hopes were that he'd come out of the bye and look a lot fitter. And I've definitely seen that in the last 2 weeks, that he does seem to actually be getting a lot more of the ball and he's scored a lot better the last 2 weeks. So hopefully that can continue.
And then if I had to nominate a fourth, I think it'd be Ward over the Richmond and Collingwood blokes, just because Ward plays for a top eight team. We'll move on to pods now, Mark. We've covered top scoring and top value. So let's talk about point of difference now. We had a question from Brenton Stancombe. Who's a pod that might go off to finish the season with? And we actually got quite a few questions like this. So I think they're also a little bit more interesting to talk about, Mark, because we tend to recycle through the same few players. I mean, every year we seem to talk about Prittis Gray. This sort of section allows us to be a bit more creative with our pick selection. And so it's always fun to do. Before we get on to listing all the players, I just want to mention the POD that's in the top eight midfielders at the moment, and that's Lachie Neale. I don't see him staying as a POD beyond this week because I think a lot of people are going to trade into him. But in 18,677 teams before round 17, he's very unique for his current scoring. The other blokes to talk about, Mark, Josh Kennedy. He slipped into the top eight midfielders. He's only selected in 10,000 teams. Jack Stephen just had a massive game, 170. He actually had a 164 in round 12, so it's not actually his top score by too much for the year, and he's had a 148 as well, so absolutely massive.
Scored a 170 without taking a single mark.
He's in 12,000 teams, Mark, 544,000. We've got Cornelio, 532,000. He's only in under 5,000 teams, and he was averaging 110 plus until dropping off a little bit. Steel Sidebottom, 491,000, selected in under 14,000 teams. And we've seen him average 110 before. Trent Cochin, Mark, your bloke, he's actually only in 6,000 teams. So he's really unique. One of the most unique players that we're talking about tonight. Bontempelli, we got a question about him from M-Town Ballers. He's at 570,000 in 12,000 teams. And he just had a 140 on the weekend. And that's his third 140 score for the season. Hit the ton only once in the first six rounds. And then ever since then, it's kind of been on fire. We've got Tom Mitchell in 16,000 teams, 490,000. And Bryce Gibbs, who we've talked about at some stage this year already, he's averaging 103. He's in under 11,000 teams. So,
for good reason.
I've listed quite a few blokes there, Mark, but and we don't have to talk about all of them. We've talked about some already. Yeah. But any call out to you in particular?
Yeah, I think that the one that I was a bit surprised you probably didn't mention a little bit earlier is Bontempelli. Has gone completely nuts in the last 5 or 6 weeks. And if you saw the last few minutes of that game on the weekend, he was completely dominant. And he's actually saw this in the back half of last year, that he was just so massive in the last 10 minutes of games that he can really get his scores going. And with Doggies fighting for the finals, I think that he scored 147, 127, 86, 128 and 140 in the last 5 weeks, which is massive.
He's averaging 120 over the last 9 rounds.
That's crazy. And I don't think that it's unreasonable to say that he will actually be able to keep that up. I guess that he probably stands out at the moment as if you were going to tag a Doggies midfielder, you would try and put some pressure on Bontempelli, which we have seen potentially work in the past a little bit. And given how dominant he is able to be, that might affect him. But for a 20-year-old, he's scoring extremely well. And out of the real, real pods, he's the one that maybe you'd want to bring in just because of the fun factor, and he has that very high ceiling. Bryce Gibbs had a string of 6 games in the middle of the season where he scored 100 and then went back to the usual Bryce Gibbs. I don't think I could touch Jack Stephen, to be honest. He has those massive games, but he also has had a lot of really quiet games, like I'm talking sub 80 games that he has, including two of the last three. I know that the Saints do have a really good draw, and I guess if you're into league finals, probably don't want someone that's really up and down like Jack Stephen, but they play Brisbane in the last round, and if he can somehow avoid the Robinson tag, then that could be good for him, but I guess he'd probably get the Robinson tag. JPK, I just wanted to look at his last six games into last year. 136, 129, 112, 121, 154, 136. So he knows how to prime himself for the end of the year. He could be all right. But I probably don't like having so many other Swans.
Get this for Sydney's run home. Hawthorn, but then Carlton, Frio, Port, St Kilda, North Melbourne and Richmond.
Yeah, wow.
Pretty good run.
Probably want to bring in Hanbury myself then, don't I?
Mm.
But that Geelong, I know Geelong have got like five at Skilled Stadium, don't they? Yeah, so I think that personally, Bontempelli is the one that probably stands out for me. JPK is probably the safest of the lot. And I'm a big Stephen Canelio fan, and I hope he can keep going. Has had some durability concerns in previous seasons, but having a really good year so far, and I expect him to be a pretty good pick for anyone that has him or looks to bring him in.
I think the real standout to me, Mark, is I've got to agree with you, is Bontempelli. I think if you want a POD, you want them to be impactful. I don't think you really much care if you've picked a POD that goes on to average 110 when you could have just picked the standard player who's going to average 110 anyway. If you're going to pick a POD and really stick your neck out, you want to go with someone that has the potential to exceed that 110 and take you to the next level. And I think Bontempelli's certainly a candidate for that. And based off that, I think you'd almost have Bryce Gibbs probably wiped out of that equation. Maybe even Tom Mitchell, because there's like three Sydney mids ahead of him. His top end's probably capped somewhat. Maybe if you're looking for a POD, somebody like Sidebottom looks pretty decent. His low end isn't too bad. He is good enough to normally score in that 80 to 90 range. But if he goes on a run of form where, you know, Treloar gets tagged and he gets to run free the whole time, Sidebottom can really get off the chain and potentially average, you know, 115 in a stretch. So I'd look to guys with potentially that higher upside. Stephen obviously is more attractive than, you know, just going with somebody like, I don't know, Josh Kennedy, for example, who I think could very well average 110, but I don't see him breaking past that. If you had to put a 1-2-3 to these pods, Mark, who would you select?
Bontempelli 1, for JPK 2, and Canelio number 3. That's probably, honestly, doing a disservice to Jack Stephen, who is probably a better pick than I'm giving him credit for.
I'm going to go Bontempelli number 1, Stephen 2, and Sidebottom number 3. So, not too...
Please bring in Sidebottom.
Already got Pendlebury and Treloar, mate, so unfortunately I'm priced into Treloar. But at this stage, if you gave me the equation of Treloar v Sidebottom, I honestly don't really know who's going to win by the end of the season.
Wait till Treloar doesn't get serious attention on him. And he showed a lot about 3 weeks ago. He definitely has the ability to split games apart, and he loves a shot at goal, and if you can actually nail a couple of them from 50, he will do very well.
All right, Mark, so we've spent quite a bit of time talking about the midfield now. Hopefully anyone looking for that last midfielder or trading Gary Ablett has sufficient information to make a good decision. We'll move on to one more question here about trading out Gary Ablett before we move on. Adam Hudson's asking, if you don't have a huge amount of trades and your bench is really thin, but you're not fully upgraded, is this Gary Ablett injury trade a way for you to maybe even downgrade to a fallen premium or take a risk on a mid-pricer, like maybe even a Brad Crouch type, or he's quoted here, Clay Smith, so that you can take that money that you make from this injury trade and use it to complete potentially Adams, who might still be on field for you, or Kerridge or Petrarca or somebody like that? What are your thoughts on that, Mark?
I actually don't hate the Brad Crouch pick, to be completely honest. Given their draw, and I think that he will actually come good. It'd be very, very team specific, and you'd have to have the exact right number of trades left. But I think, yeah, having Kerridge and Adams stuck on your field for the rest of the season, like if you've got more than five trades at the moment, it'd be really good if you could find a way to get them off the field or upgrade them. So, look, I don't think it's the worst idea.
Yeah.
What do you reckon?
Well, I guess if you're bringing in a Crouch or Smith type, Crouch has scored 83, 83 and 109 in the past few weeks, but having started the season with him, I wouldn't be too confident that, you know, he's always going to hit those 109s instead of the 83. If he just continues to score 83, that's relatively disappointing. And Smith, who's just came back and scored 82 and 95, if you're bringing one of these two types in for a midfielder and you're upgrading Kerridge, really what you're looking at is a comparison of Smith and Crouch v like a Kerridge Petrarca type, together with the XVY of the premium midfielder that you could have hit versus the premium forward that you are able to upgrade to. At the end of the day, you're still having to trade in a subpar player onto your field in order to facilitate this upgrade. So you're replacing like a Kerridge type with a Smith type. And I'm not necessarily sure that Clay Smith or Crouch are that much better than Kerridge or Petrarca, that you'd take a premium forward over a premium midfielder or a premium backman over a premium midfielder.
Yep, all that makes sense, mate. What you'd really be hoping on, and this is why if I was in that situation, Brad Crouch would be the guy, just that you would hope that somehow he pulls out an average of like 100 and makes it all kind of okay.
All right, we'll move on to Michael Barlow and Daniel Wells, Mark. We just wanted to quickly mention them and their status and what you should do. I think Barlow and Wells are both sort of chances to come back this week, aren't they?
Barlow, because he was close to playing last week, I'd expect him to play. Wells didn't train today. He'd definitely have to be training in the main session on Thursday, which he seems less likely than likely to me. And kind of a real tricky spot in my mind, just trying to deal with it. Like, should I have traded him to Merritt last week? And would that have been going too low on trades? So really, really hoping he gets up. And I think that whether he does or he doesn't is going to have a huge impact on my season.
Considering we're in this deep, we're basically holding if either of these guys miss and just hoping they're back next week. Isn't that correct?
Yeah, like on the weekend, I had Rose's 31 and could have traded Wells to Merritt if I wanted to, but it's not a donut. I'd rather just keep the trades at the moment and have a bit more certainty going on into the last 4 or 5 weeks.
Yep, agree with that. All right, we'll move on to this next question from Steve now. More of a general trade question. Do we hang on to trades for primo injuries or shore up our benches for extra depth? So we've covered this a little bit in various forms over the last few weeks, but basically you're holding on to trades for primo injuries, and not just primo injuries, potentially donut injuries or long-term injuries. If you have short-term injuries, and even if you have a player scoring 31 like Mark did last week, you might still hold on to your trades. Yeah, there's no real deviation from that unless you have a massive glut of trades, like 7+, 8+.
Now, it's interesting to hear you say that, mate, because in the last few years, you have traded for a deeper bench.
And it's not worked out, and I've learned my lesson.
Because we've had this discussion and argument for the last, like, probably 3 or 4 years on the podcast, and I've always been on the side of, no, save your trades and don't bring in this extra bench cover. And sometimes when you've brought in the bench cover, it has worked, and I've been like, damn, that idiot, he's bloody getting so lucky. But then, like, overall, your perception of the last few years of doing that is that you're just better off just saving for the actual injuries to occur, because I guess what you're saying is that you can't predict where you're going to need that cover and when.
Yeah, and I think the game has changed a little bit as well. Rotations have gone down. It's really demanding game. The focus on getting players right for the next preseason is very high, so players just seem to be put out to pasture more. We've extended the competition out to 18 teams, so there's 2 extra teams that aren't making finals, and then you'd argue that because the difference this year between that top 8 and the bottom 10 is a little bit more stark, there's also a whole bunch of teams that are going to be like nowhere close to finals and be well aware of that in the next few weeks, really. And some have already conceded that they won't make finals, like Richmond have. Yeah.
Watch the injury list in 3 weeks' time, and a lot of teams is going to be very, very long.
Yeah, and I think in the past, I would have recommended, shore up your benches. If you can't deal with Wells, try and bring in another premium forward without trading out Wells. That way, when Wells comes back, you can potentially loophole with an extra premium, and in the meantime, you get a premium on field anyway. But that's way too risky now, because the amount of players that just get put out to rest for the rest of the season, and it's just not something that I've adjusted to very well over the last 2 years. It's caused my results to crash a bit over the last 2 years. We've seen our leagues basically lead the league race for the entirety of the last 2 years, and to lose basically in the last week, the last couple of years. I think a revised approach is required. And what's that quote, Mark? Stupid is doing the same thing multiple times and expecting a different result.
Yeah, potentially, except in luck games where things might actually change.
Thanks, mate.
I mean, I could have done Adams to Motlop last week, and that would have brought me in some extra bench cover, but Motlop put in another stinker, so I'm glad I didn't. I just think that you've got unpredictable stuff. Like at the moment, we've got Trengrove and players like Phillips and players that we sort of maybe expected might be playing at the moment, not even playing on our benches, which just means that those trades are going to be even more important late in the year if we don't actually have cover on our benches.
All right, we'll move on to the rookies quickly before we round out the show. Now, we'll start off with a general rookie trade question, and then we'll get into the specific players. But this question here is from @CamLock on Twitter. Is this the best time to make a last downgrade trade for the year, or is it worth trading in a non-playing player who's, you know, really, really dirt cheap to maximize the amount of cash that you bring in? I think that unless you need cash for an upgrade or for a side swap or whatever, at this point in the season, never just downgrade so that you have cash in bank ready for your next upgrade or your next injury trade or whatever. Like, when you get the injury trade, then make a decision that week on who you need to bring in, who's available, who's actually playing, all those sorts of things. You might not even need that last downgrade trade for the year. That's a big reason not to make it. You could bring in a player who then gets dropped the following week. You know, there are some people considering bringing in Phillips in round 15 for the buys because they just needed to get an extra player coming. Imagine if you brought in Phillips, he scored 29 and then got dropped. That's why you don't make these random downgrades until you actually need the cash, because you delay the decision until you have the most, you know, sort of possible knowledge with that. I think that's a fair no-brainer. Mark, would you agree with that?
Yeah, I do, mate. And I think that really upgrade season is kind of over if you can avoid it. Like if you want to upgrade Kerridge or an Adams type on field, I think that combining it with an Ablett trade this week and maybe taking one of those value options is the way to go. I think going like full downgrade, full upgrade, maybe some teams have done it a bit slower than others, but for the future, if you are one of those people, I encourage you to do it a little bit quicker, just because like you've only got 7 weeks of an upgrade and you're just not going to get a lot of value out of doing 7 week upgrades. Even if it's 20 points a week, you're only getting 140 back. So yeah, and I definitely wouldn't be downgrading just to put money in the bank.
All right, so the rookies that we're actually talking about are Jack Silvani, Matthew Hamelman, and Mitch Brown. So I think we did talk about all three of Silvani, Hamelman, and Brown last week, and they all proceeded to play their second games of the season. So Mark, seeing as we already have my take from last week, what are your thoughts on any of these three blokes?
Silvani's obviously creating a bit of excitement and getting the fans to the game, and also looks like he's got a bit of potential to develop a bit over the last few weeks. So hopefully they would play him. He seems okay. Probably the same goes with Hamelman from Brisbane, that you'd expect them to get games into him. Mitch Brown is probably the one that has the most experience, obviously. He's been around for quite a while. He's been playing as the forward / ruck. And I'm reading that Nick Knapp might only be 3 weeks away. And I'm thinking that Brown really hasn't set the world on fire. So he might actually go out when Nick Knapp comes back, seeing as he's not playing in his normal key defender role. So, yeah, I mean, he's as good as any in the back line at the moment. But you'd just be a little bit wary on that.
I think if you're looking at a backline player, I'd be tempted to take Hamelman, especially if you had a Tippenwoody or Adams type still left in the forward line. Hamelman, even though I wouldn't say he has brilliant job security, is in the team as a defender right now, despite having played most of his 2 years at Brisbane so far playing as a forward. He got shifted to the backline a few rounds ago when they were looking for a replacement, basically, in the backline because they got hit by so many injuries. Jackson Payne, I don't know if people remember him, it was available mid-season. He broke into the team and then got injured with a foot injury, and I think Hamelman's basically come into that tall defender spot. If you do need a backline rookie this week, he's actually a semi-decent get.
Speaking of backline rookies, how good has Caden Brand been getting his shit together?
Yeah, it's fantastic. Seems to be, if you pick the right rookies, and even if they don't work out straight away, you just have a little bit of patience with them. They seem to be able to turn it around if you give them enough time.
Oh, please don't bring up Menapu, mate. Bloody trade him out to Rose. Rose does shit and Menapu goes nuts, comes back into the team and goes completely nuts.
Even Ryan Davis turned things around this season.
Yeah, he has turned it around, hasn't he?
It's really been a season of sticking to your guns. I think even Gresham, like, you gave him enough time. He's at 300,000 now.
Yep, and that was like, I knew people mocked people for keeping those guys at some points.
All right, Mark, that pretty much wraps up the questions for the show. So we'll move to our final segment of the show, as we've been doing for the last couple, the Captain's Corner. Have you had a look at who you might go with this week?
Yeah, I guess I've had a decent record with captains the last 4 weeks. I think I've got it pretty much top scorer in my team every week as the captain, which is good.
Yeah, since we've done this segment, it's worked out very well. So I'm hoping it's sort of good karma and we can keep it going.
I'm thinking Danger over in Freo against the Dockers is pretty obvious. I guess Barlow might go to him. That'd probably be the only concern. And as just as the vice captain, and then like I'm struggling a little bit about who I would keep as my captain. Like Pritis has been in decent form, but they're playing in Melbourne. Rocky plays against the Giants, and a lot of midfielders don't have great records against them. Pendles is playing over in Adelaide, and I guess that the one that maybe stands out is Dusty against the Bombers. Like I really can't see the Bombers completely holding him down. So, and Dusty's, I think his lowest scores this year has been an 80 anyway, so he might be a decent captain backup.
So if you had to lock in two, Mark, who's going to be?
Danger to Dusty, mate.
Damn it, just stole mine. Just stole my thunder. I have Danger to Dusty too. I thought I was going to get a unique one with Dusty, but it seems like a good week for Dusty this week. He's been in ripping form, and even if he's only averaging 111 Supercoach points, he's actually just like smashing the disposal count and just not making the most of all his disposals because they've been under a bit more pressure. But his top end is massive at the moment. A game against Essendon seems like a good time to be putting the C on him.
They don't seem to be really like going for all out with the tag either. So, like, I know Jack Stephen got out against us.
If you were looking to play it safe, for example, if you're in a league situation where you're comfortably ahead and all you need to do is sort of hang on, then Pritis is actually, I think, a pretty damn good option. He'll be fairly safe 110, 120, you think, against Carlton, and that makes a fairly good captain most days of the week. As a vice captain, you definitely wouldn't pick Pritis, obviously, but if Dangerfield's crapped out and you're nervous about your captaincy score, Pritis against Carlton does seem like a good one. Just before we go, don't forget you can ask us questions on our social media accounts on Facebook and on Twitter on a Tuesday. And of course, you can donate to us at Patreon at patreon.com/supercoachcoach if you're looking to help out with the running cost of the show. Thank you so much for tuning in again, and we'll catch you all next week. See ya.
See ya.